Hey friends, and welcome back to my Sweet A pod, Half Haunted. This is your host, Kennedy Stark. And for those of you that are coming back, thank you so much for all the support of my first episode. It literally went so well, went so much better than I could have hoped, and you guys were so freaking supportive. For those of you who reached out to me and were so nice and just telling me how much you loved it, I appreciate you so much. That was just the best thing that could have ever happened and meant the world to me. So those of you guys who listened and you liked it, or even listened and hated it, that's okay. Thanks for listening. I really appreciate it. Yeah, anyways, welcome back. This is episode 2, and I'm happy to be here. I'm stoked to be here. And I hope that you guys enjoy this episode. I put a lot into it, and it might be a little longer than the first, but that's okay. But if you guys follow me on Instagram, if you don't, you should. But if you do follow me on Instagram, you probably saw that I posted that I have a new segment that I want to kind of try out, I guess. So this segment today is called Kennedy's Creepy Movie Review. And if you guys know me, like if you are close with me or know me well, you know that I am obsessed with movies, specifically horror movies and just like suspense movies, scary movies, I guess. So I thought that having this segment in my podcast was just, I don't know, natural for me. What's it called? Like the, it's not Darwinism. Dude, it's like 1 a.m. I'm really struggling at the moment, but okay. Human nature for me. I don't know. Anyways, I thought it'd be really fun if we did a spooky movie review. So let's just hop right into it, my guy. Let's just hop right into it. So today's movie, so this week, like I mentioned, or no, I don't think I mentioned. So this week was my birthday, and I'm sorry if you guys have already heard that, because to me it's like birth month, so I like to really celebrate. But anyways, it was my birthday this week, and it was the best day ever. I had so much fun and got to do like everything I wanted, and got 2 new plants that I've really been wanting, and ate some cake, and it was just perfect. And then at the end of the night, my husband Jared was like, okay, what do you want to do? And I was like, I 100% want to watch a scary movie. And he does not really like them as much, so it's a big deal that he wanted to do that with me. So we started looking up movies to watch, and I came across One Missed Call. And this movie was made in 2008. It's PG-13, and it's listed as a horror thriller. And I didn't know this until tonight, but it has horrid reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. But I remember when I was a kid, shout out to one of my best friends, Emily Slade. But I remember that Emily Slade saw One Missed Call, and she loved it. And she like was talking about it one day, and I was like, man, freaking Emily is so cool for watching such a scary movie, because we were young at the time when she had watched it, and it made me feel so lame that I was too scared to watch it. So this week I was like, you know what, I'm finally gonna watch this movie. So I did. So here's my review of One Missed Call. So how this is gonna go is I'm gonna give you a little bit of the plot. I'm not going to tell you the ending or anything, because I don't want to ruin it for those of you who haven't seen it. But if you haven't seen it by now, it was came out in 2008, so like you're kind of behind. But that's okay. I won't give you the ending. But then after that, I have categories of kind of the ratings I want to go through. So I have gore, humor, jump scares, suspense, character development, plot, and would I watch it with my dad? And then after that, I will give it my overall rating. So here we go. So starting with the plot. So the movie opens up to the death of a girl named Shelley. And her death is kind of weird, but it basically happens by a hand dragging her into a pond in her backyard. And after that shot, it shows a shot of her phone on the table and presumably some kind of spirit thing is scrolling through her contacts. You just see her phone screen and just scrolling through her contacts and you're like, oh, okay, what's going on? That's kind of weird, but it's chill. You just, whatever, it's cool. So then after that happens, after her death, it's this party scene and you meet this girl, Beth, and this girl, Leanne, and the Leanne girl is all, I'm pretty sure from what I remember, is kind of heartbroken about this boy that she broke up with. I think that's what's going on. And also Shelly's death, because she's taken it pretty hard, which, I mean, if it was my close friend, I would too. That is awful. Leanne gets a call on her phone, but she's like, oh my gosh, that's not my ringtone. And they're like, what the freak? So she answers the phone, or no, sorry. It's one missed call, of course. It's one missed call. But there's a voicemail. So she listens to the voicemail and she's like confused. And so Beth listens to the voicemail and she's like, Leanne, this is your voice. And she's like, what the frick? And then what happens is you learn that the voicemail is in the future with the date and the time that she's going to die. So then fast forward a little bit, on the day that Leanne is supposed to die, she starts to see really strange and kind of creepy things. And then eventually, just like what happened in the phone call, she dies. Just the way that it happened also in the phone call. But Beth watches this happen and is horrified, obviously, by what happens. So after Leanne dies, Beth watches Leanne's severed hand, arm, I guess, type a number on her phone and call someone else. But while this is all happening, we learn of a detective who finds out that his sister has died while out in the woods, and the same thing has happened to her. And the weird thing about all the deaths that occur in the movie is that all the victims have this hard red candy in their mouth, and the calls then continue throughout the group of friends that you see in the movie until eventually it gets to Beth and they call Beth's phone, whoever it is. So the detective and Beth basically kind of team up in the movie and try to figure out the mystery behind the calls and the deaths. And together they learn of this woman and her two daughters and how they're involved in the story. So I'm going to stop there with the plot, because I don't want to give it away and I don't want to say too much. But that's kind of the summary, I guess, the plot so far of what you need to know about One Missed Call. Getting to the categories, we have number one, which is gore. So I am going to rate gore a 2 out of 5. 2 out of 5. Because I felt that the gore in the movie, it wasn't too much. I personally do not like it when movies are super gory. I hate that. Especially when it's very unnecessary. And at some points in this movie, I felt that it was kind of a little bit like, that was a little dumb. But at the same time, you could tell all of it is super fake. Like, let me just say up front, this movie is not scary at all. I feel I need to make that very clear. The CGI is horrid. So that almost adds a layer of humor, which is appreciated. But yes, this movie is not scary at all. So the gore, though, at sometimes I was like, that wasn't super necessary. You can tell all of it's fake and it was pretty stupid. So gore is a 2 out of 5. Humor, 0 out of 5. I don't remember any humor at all. It was pretty they wanted it to seem pretty intense and like a drama the whole time. So humor is a 0. Jump scares, I would say, are a 2 out of 5. They tried to put a few in there, and though there are some, they weren't bad at all. Suspense. There were also quite a few moments where it was quite suspenseful, but at the same time, wasn't bad. Like, it wasn't, you knew it was coming. It's one of those where you know it's coming. So you're good. Okay, next one, character development. I gave character development a 1 out of 5. I felt that these characters were about as bland as a bowl of rice, a plain tortilla chip, if you will, when you're seeking Doritos. Essentially, the only character that has even a little bit of character development, in my opinion, was Beth, because you get a little bit of backstory, and then the other characters, like the mom and the two little girls, because their story is what the plot depends on. So character development was a big miss for me, and that I love movies that have that. So that was a 1 out of 5. Plot, 2 out of 5. It was okay, but it wasn't great. So, and then would I watch it with my dad? 100%, because it was cheesy and I felt we could laugh at it. 5 out of 5. Love my dad. So chill. So that brings me to my overall rating of this movie, One Missed Call. 1 out of 5. I'm so sorry for those of you that love it, but I did give it a 1 out of 5. I will say though, I did go and buy the ringtone from the movie, and it is my current ringtone. So I did get something pretty good out of it. So I hope you guys enjoyed that. That's my new little segment. We're going to try it out. Maybe we'll mix it up. Maybe we'll add some different categories. I don't know. We'll see where it goes. But now let's jump into the story. I'm really excited for this story and this specific place I'm going to be talking about today. And that is the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum. Before I want to start, though, I do want to add a trigger warning at the beginning of this episode, because this episode does get a little bit intense. So we will be talking about murder. There is mention of a little bit of suicide and just some really intense topics. So if you don't want to hear those things or want to listen, that's totally fine. Maybe this isn't the one for you. Just throwing that out there before we get started. But so let's go ahead and just jump right in. So first of all, though the individuals who suffered through this horrid experience that was the Weston State Hospital are deceased, we still have the stories of what happened to them, which is enlightening, but also just helps us to understand what they truly went through. AllThat'sInteresting.com says, what was supposed to be a place of peace and restoration soon devolved into madness and destruction. To set the stage, in the beautiful green hills of Weston, West Virginia, sits a lavish giant building that reminds me of a building that could be Downton Abbey meets X-Men boarding school. This large brown building with a huge stark white tower shooting from the main entrance building was constructed between 1858 and 1881 and is the largest hand-cut stone masonry building in North America. The original hospital, gaining the name Weston State Hospital in 1913, was built to hold 250 patients, and it was open from 1864, but then hit its peak in the 1950s with around 2,400 patients. That's 2,150 patients over capacity. Because of the overcrowding conditions, it quickly became horrible and inhumane for all the patients that resided there. Because of this, the facility was forced to close in 1994 and never reopened as a hospital. With that being said, and keeping that in mind, let's dive into the history and what truly happened inside the walls of the Weston State Hospital, or what today is known as the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum. The original building was the idea and work of Thomas Story Kirkbird, who was a doctor that had progressive ideas and beliefs about mental health. He even eventually founded what would become the American Psychiatric Association. He even wanted to change the misconceptions about mental illness at the time. Things like that it wasn't essentially terminal and that it shouldn't be treated in secrecy and with great force. Kirkbird focused on the importance of fresh air and sunlight and had the building constructed to support that idea. The building had many windows and great ventilation. Sunlight poured through the windows, and patients that resided there often had fresh breeze that came through the hospital. He was also very passionate about allowing the patients to have a lot of freedom. He felt that the mental patients should be allowed to have the ability to roam whenever possible, to invoke stimulation for their minds, and help give them control over their lives. Though these were all great ideas in theory, they weren't exactly executed very well. When the hospital finally opened in 1863, the hospital was beautiful. The grounds not only had a working hospital with rooms and an apothecary, but was also a working farm, a dairy, waterworks, gas well, and a cemetery. It was state-of-the-art and was a great place for patients to feel comfortable and safe and even have fun. They had many plays and activities and enjoyed their time while they were there. One of the patients even stated, "I remember the Thanksgiving thing was great. We had great turkeys and the Christmas thing was wonderful. It was like a fairy tale atmosphere. You know what I mean? It's like I must be in heaven. I'm not in a nut house. I'm in heaven." But from there, things started to go downhill. In 1881, not only did mental health diagnoses start to increase, but many people were starting to be checked into the West End State Hospital that didn't really need to be. There were individuals there that were seeking help for things like addictions and had medical reasons like tuberculosis or even things like asthma. But it has been said that almost anyone could have been admitted to the asylum. In a photograph from the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum found on hauntedhistoryjaunts.com, some of the listed causes for being admitted were imaginary female trouble, laziness, immoral life, novel reading, overaction of the mind, political excitement, religious excitement, bad company, domestic trouble, jealousy, women trouble, seduction and disappointment, fell from a horse in a war, and other things like the sort. Some of the most disturbing ones that I found, though, was if a man just wasn't satisfied with his wife, or if even she had just lost a child and was grieving, he could just basically drop her off and commit her to the West End State Hospital and have her subject to such inhumane and horrible treatment, basically just because he kind of didn't want to deal with her. And she could be subject to anything from neglect to murder. Seeing what kind of traits would get you committed to West End State, it's no wonder that it became so overcrowded so quickly. And I feel that you would be hard-pressed to find an individual today that wouldn't have something to cause them to be eligible, checked into West End State. I 100% would be checked into West End State. As more people filled the hospital, the more chaotic and horrifying things became. People became more violent, workers became more desperate. Patients started to be crammed together in spaces, with sometimes having 4 to 5 people in a room that was made for just one individual. The farm and dairy weren't able to keep up and provide for the amount of people, causing malnutrition in those that were staying there, thus intensifying their mental illnesses and the violence. Eventually, the Charleston Gazette tried to expose the conditions that had unfolded and sent in a crew to investigate the asylum. What they found was absolutely horrifying, as you can imagine. The sanitation had basically gone to crap, no pun intended. The rooms were absolutely filthy. The windows that were once bright and beautiful and brought in sunlight were now covered in grime and dirt and brought darkness to all the rooms. The wallpaper was peeling from the walls from either decay because of neglect or because the patients themselves tore it down in manic episodes. The worst crimes were what happened to the patients that resided in the hospital. Some were found sleeping on the dirty, cold floor due to space issues. Those that were considered dangerous or unable to be controlled were locked in cages, so there was more room for others that were less threatening. It is said that patients were also tied to their beds or even sinks in the bathroom. Staff would even lock patients in solitary confinement for days to weeks at a time. In one story from Road Unraveled, isolation was so harrowing and so mentally distressing that a man who was a former boxer that had injuries that left him emotionless and sometimes violent attempted to beat down the metal door when he was placed in solitary confinement. He ended up ripping one of the doors off its hinges and left visible dents in the other door. One of the worst crimes committed, though, were the countless lobotomies that were performed there. For those that don't know, a lobotomy is a neurosurgical treatment for mental disorders and illnesses that involved severing the connections in the prefrontal cortex of the brain in an individual. It often left individuals emotionally stunted and incapacitated for the rest of their lives. Complications and deaths were often frequent with the procedure, and it was highly, highly controversial in its time. The procedure used at Weston State was called a transorbital lobotomy, otherwise known as the ice pick lobotomy, which involved the insertion of an instrument resembling an ice pick into the eye socket until it connected with the brain tissue. Walter Freeman was a famous surgeon and advocate for the procedure and came to Weston State to start performing these surgeries there in the 1950s. The hope was that the procedure would help with the overcrowding, but as expected, it caused many complications to a lot of the patients, even death. Considering all these horrendous events, it's no surprise that Weston State Hospital was closed. Yet, it didn't close until May of 1994. It was then bought by Joe Jordan in 2007 and has been turned into a tourist attraction, hosting tours since. It is now renamed the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum and has been featured on many TV shows like Ghost Adventures, Portals to Hell, and Destination Fear. Of course, with all the violent and dreadful history, many claim that Trans-Allegheny is haunted, including the now owner. Some of the most well-known spirits are Lily, Ruth, and Dean. Lily is believed to be a little girl who is actually born and died within the walls of Trans-Allegheny. Many children were born and were raised inside Trans-Allegheny. It is said that she isn't afraid to make herself known to those that visit and has been reported holding hands, giggling, tugging on the clothing of those that walk there, stealing candy, and playing invisible games of ball. Ruth was another patient who spent time at Trans-Allegheny and was said to be an aggressive and violent older woman. She has a great dislike towards men, and it has been said that she can be encountered near her holding cell. Lastly, Dean's story is a little more violent. Dean has been said to haunt the room that he was brutally murdered in. In this room, it is also said that you can hear voices telling visitors to get out because that's also a room where a double suicide occurred. On this same floor, it has been said that another spirit who was the victim of a stabbing tugs on the pants of those that walk by as if using all the strength he has left to seek help. It is also said that doors are often left open by a spirit named Elizabeth, who worked as a nurse in the hospital and is doing her rounds. While I was reading back through my notes and just about the story itself, it made me think about a parallel between the windows of the asylum and the history of the asylum itself. And if you think about it, the windows of the asylum were built to be that light and that warmth for those that entered, so it could help them and uplift them. But instead, because of the neglect and the horrors that took place inside, they became disgusting and covered, and they made the rooms black. And that's exactly what happened on the inside. It used to be a beautiful place of healing and upliftment, and people loved it at one time, but then everything went downhill and it became a place of horrors. Well, everyone, thank you so much for listening. That's all I have for you guys today, and I really hope that you enjoyed hearing about the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum. Please let me know if you guys have been there. I am so interested to hopefully go one day. I think it would be just the coolest experience. It would scare the piss out of me, but I think it would be so cool. Please, if you guys have been, reach out to me on Instagram or Facebook, whatever it is, and just let me know how it went and your experience and the things that you saw while you were there. I'd love to know. Make sure to follow me on Instagram at the Half Haunted Podcast. And if you like this podcast, please subscribe. I'd really appreciate it. And I'll see you guys next time. Thanks.